Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, there's an organization that started right here in Columbus and is quickly expanding nationally with the goal of helping girls succeed in relationships, academics, careers, and life. Founder and CEO Dr. Lisa Hinkleman joins us with more information about Ruling Our Experiences, or ROCS for short. And the Columbus Metropolitan Library has resources available to help small businesses and nonprofits, and many of them are free of charge with your library card. CML's Adult Services Manager Christine Cook will join us to share more about that. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, Dr. Lisa Hinkleman is the founder and CEO of Ruling Our Experiences. It's called ROCS for short, an organization that started here in Central Ohio but is expanding nationwide for a very important reason. They provide research-backed resources and programs to help girls use their voice, rule their experiences, and embrace their confidence. Dr. Hinkleman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I suppose it doesn't need to be asked, but I want to find out from you personally, what was it that spurred you to begin this movement?
Well, the work behind ROCS, I think, was informed by my own experiences as a girl feeling that I didn't fit in or struggling with my confidence, or that I was the only one going through the experiences that I was having. But then when I became a counselor, I realized much more fully and deeply that many of the experiences that are facing girls are quite universal. And the issues that are impacting them during their adolescent years, like these drops in confidence and conflict and tension with other girls, restricted aspirations around their careers or leadership. You know, the stress and pressure that girls are experiencing is much more universal than it is a unique experience. And I thought there was something that I could do about it. And I started a research study. I was a professor at The Ohio State University. And that was the early makings of the organization that has become Ruling Our Experiences.
In 2023, ROCS published the Girls Index with statistics like over half of girls don't believe they're smart enough for their dream career. And I know we always kind of use the COVID pandemic as this sort of touchstone in time. But for me, a big takeaway from COVID was we became much more open in our society, talking about mental health, talking about things like this, that girls aren't as confident in educational settings or professional settings. Did you find that with those kinds of changes in our societal treatment of talking about things like mental health, has that helped or hindered your work?
Well, I think both. That statistic that you cited is based on a study that we conducted with more than 17,000 girls across the country. It was a replication of a research study that we did in 2017, pre-COVID, and we're able to look at what has happened for girls over the last 6 years. And I think that what we found was frustrating, was sad, and really is putting a call to action for us to ensure that we're impacting and influencing and supporting girls in the best possible way. Because while we're able to more easily shine a light on the challenges that girls are facing, because there is some increased acceptance of addressing the stress and pressure and the mental well-being of students and of youth, it still was so devastating to realize how much they have declined in their perceptions, in their confidence over the last 6 years. And so it's increased our call to action, our desire to not let our foot off the gas and to expand our work and impact so that we're able to support and encourage and empower as many girls as possible here in Central Ohio as well as throughout the country.
It was in 2011 that ROCS became an organization, a 501c3 official nonprofit organization here in Central Ohio. And you have scaled nationally, this organization, across more than 30 states at this point. More than 6,500 girls annually are impacted by what your organization does. Dr. Lisa Hinkleman is who we're talking to. She's the founder and CEO of Ruling Our Experiences. We call it ROCS for short. And I'd like to hear more from you, Dr. Lisa, about what, on a day-to-day basis, ROCS is doing to provide this support, to provide this kind of empowerment to girls and young women.
We have two basic areas of work at ROCS. One is a 20-week evidence-based program that is delivered through schools throughout the country. We train and license school counselors, school social workers, and educators to deliver a curriculum that small groups of girls in 5th through 12th grade participate in, where they have the chance to explore some of the big issues that they're facing during these critical growing up years. They go through the 20 weeks as a cohort by this trained professional who can help them explore and learn and grow and develop new skills and competencies that help them navigate and address the big issues that are coming down the pike for them, whether it is dealing with social media, navigating conflict or bullying, standing up to sexual harassment or sexual violence, or planning their future, their career and leadership aspirations. We really recognize that the messages that girls are receiving from the world have the chance to hold them back from reaching their full potential. And we want every girl to have the chance to truly reach what she is capable of and have a network and an environment of support that tells her that she is capable and worthy of everything that she wants in her life. That program is operating in more than 500 schools across 32 states right now, and we are on track to have ROCS in all 50 states by the end of the 2025-26 school year. The other side of the work of the organization is an institute for research and training. And that's where we conduct large-scale national research with girls and then put that research into action in tangible ways to support the adults who have girls in their lives, whether they're parents, teachers, sports coaches, mentors, advocates, coaches, faith leaders. We really believe that everybody who has a girl that is in their sphere of influence can do their job, their relationship, their support better by truly understanding what's happening in girls' lives and then applying strategies and skills to enhance their communication and their relationship.
It seems like we should be expecting better, you know, from the world. We've been talking about equality and equity and all of these things, and yet you're still finding in your research and in your work and in your experiences out in these schools that girls really are falling behind and, as you said, being held back. Have there been any surprises that have struck you along the way in terms of what girls are facing, or maybe pleasant surprises about what you expected to be worse?
I think that we live in this world where girls are receiving messages that are juxtaposed. On one hand, we're telling them, you can be anything that you want, and the sky is the limit, and all of these kind of girl power sort of messages. But on the other hand, we're also telling girls that you have to look like this and you have to behave like this and these are the right careers for you and don't be too loud or too opinionated because people won't like you. And oftentimes those messages are really conflicting and girls are trying to navigate how to be both strong and confident and kind and accessible. And I think for them, that confusion is playing itself out in a lot of ways where they're experiencing tremendous stress and pressure. 79% of girls in this research reported that they're under so much pressure that they feel like they're going to explode. And they talk about grades, school, relationships, and family issues as the top stressors that they're trying to navigate. I think one of the most surprising things that jumped out for me between the 2017 and the 2023 data was how much worse things became for the youngest girls. The fifth and sixth grade girls in our sample experienced the biggest drops in confidence alongside the biggest increases in sadness and depression. And when we looked and started to make sense of what are the contributors to some of this, we also saw that this group had the largest uptick in their social media use. And so when we think about the outcomes for these youngest girls, fifth grade girls are 10. So 10 and 11-year-old girls are now faring in the ways that we would have seen maybe eighth or ninth grade girls a few years ago. And that drives me to want to understand more of what's contributing here, but also what can we do to stop this downward spiral and get these girls the support and back on the trajectory for a positive, successful future. So that part concerns me. That should be a call to action for us, that the challenges start well before middle school. And so our supports, the attention that we're paying to even young girls, challenges is that we have to take those seriously. We can't just say, oh, well, she's only in fifth grade. Like, how bad can it be? We have to see that the starting point for some of the confidence, leadership, emotional challenges are starting much earlier than we previously would have thought.
Wow. Dr. Lisa Hinkleman is the founder and CEO of ROCKS, Ruling Our Experiences, based right here in Columbus, Ohio, but expanding nationally at a wonderful rate, because obviously, as we've talked today, this is needed. This is needed for girls across the country. Before we go, Dr. Hinkleman, I know you have a lot going on, but I understand that your organization has a new partnership with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
We do. We have had the chance to work with the Blue Jackets Foundation for the last few years, where they have helped support girls to participate in ROCKS programs in Central Ohio. In 2018, we produced a report called Girls in Sports, where we looked at the impact of sports on the outcomes for girls. And we saw that girls who participated in sports reported higher levels of confidence and leadership and tended to get along better with other girls and form more healthy relationships. And so since that time, we've been focused on how can we support girls in their sport? How can we support girls in their environment? And how can we support the adults who are coaching, mentoring, and raising girls in our community? And this year, the Blue Jackets came through with a three-year, $250,000 investment in ROCKS to allow us to deepen our impact here in Central Ohio with thousands of girls who will have the chance to participate in the ROCKS 20-week program, and hundreds of parents and coaches who will have the chance to learn and grow and develop new skills to better support and engage their girls. We're also having the chance to help female hockey players who are navigating some of the hard challenges of growing up alongside the challenges of playing a sport that is typically dominated by boys. And that navigation and that growth has its own set of challenges and opportunities. And I love the fact that the Blue Jackets are willing to support in Central Ohio the growth and the investment in female hockey, but they're also demonstrating an investment in girls in our community, because we have to create healthy, competent, confident girls if we're going to create healthy, competent, confident hockey players. And I love the fact that the holistic view of growing and empowering girls can come from multiple spaces in our community. And the Blue Jackets have been such fantastic partners in seeing the big picture.
Shout out to the Blue Jackets. Very nice. RulingOurExperiences.com is the website where you can get more information. There is a wealth of information there. As we've discussed in these just past few minutes, Dr. Lisa and her staff are working tirelessly doing this research and engaging with young girls and young women at their level to help them embrace their confidence, to grow in ways that they may have never known they could before. Dr. Lisa Hinkleman, founder and CEO of Ruling Our Experiences Rocks, thank you so much for joining us today on Columbus Perspective.
Thank you for having me.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. The Columbus Metropolitan Library is kicking off a promotional campaign to draw some attention to something I will say I didn't know about, and many, I think, don't. We're joined today by Christine Cook, the Adult Services Manager for the Columbus Metropolitan Library. What we're talking about is resources for small businesses and nonprofits that are available free of charge at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. I know, I had no idea either. Christine, thanks so much for joining us. We clearly have a lot to learn from you.
Absolutely, Kate. I'm happy to be here.
So the library's main branch downtown in Columbus actually has a space where people can go, a dedicated workspace, to find some resources that they may need for their small business. And that's something that you had in the works for a while, and then, shockingly, COVID disrupted everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We did. We started work on this pre-pandemic. It was something that we had envisioned after the renovation when we reopened in 2016. And afterward, we just really wanted to utilize the space on our third floor here at Main in order to offer a spot for our very dedicated small business owners and our nonprofit leaders. It's an area that we have worked with over the years to provide services. We offer research tools where they can pull data and information in order to identify customers and grow their business. But really having a physical space in the library is something that we really wanted to have. And we offer spaces for them to meet in smaller groups or one-on-one pods that they can come and plug their laptops in to really concentrate on. And that's in addition to the meeting and study rooms that we have here, as well as most of our locations.
And not only do you have the physical kind of spaces where, as you mentioned, people can do these actual work tasks, you also have the opportunity to meet one-on-one as a small business owner or perhaps someone running a nonprofit, to meet one-on-one with a librarian who can kind of help find the right resources for you, correct?
You can. That's one of our best resources, is our staff and the knowledge that they bring and the expertise that they have learned over the years. And so we offer this in a couple of different ways. So we have ongoing classes and programs that happen regularly. Many of them are here at Main Library, but we also offer them virtually via Crowdcast, and we do simulcast some of them to our branches as well, where you can go and watch the program happening here, but without actually visiting us. And you can ask questions and interact that way with our librarians. If anybody's interested in that, so to look at our events, you visit columbuslibrary.org, and then there is an event link toward the top of the page, and it will take you to both the in-person classes as well as the virtual crowdcasts. And while you're on there as well, if you look at our adult tab, there is actually a business and nonprofit resource center page on our website that you can visit. And there are links to be able to book one-on-one appointments with our librarians. And those happen both virtually and in person. And if any of those times don't work, we are always happy to work with anybody to find a time that does.
We're talking about classes like free legal help for small businesses and other things like that that you may not think about if you're an entrepreneur trying to get off the ground. classes on how to write a business proposal. These are all things that maybe you can Google, but with either a virtual or one-on-one or in-person learning opportunity, you can get so much out of this. We're talking with Christine Cook, the Adult Services Manager for the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and she wants you to know that there are a lot of resources available, not only at the main branch downtown, where they have this amazing business and nonprofit resource center, but at all the branches. You have librarians on staff that are chock full of knowledge and ready to offer that expertise to you. And is there also meeting space available for people to use at the library, Christine?
There is. So we love to view ourselves as a place for the community to gather, whether that's for fun or getting business done, whatever in between. There is space for everyone at the library. And most of our locations have meeting rooms and study rooms available. Study rooms typically hold between one and four people. And then our meeting rooms go all the way up to the auditorium here at Main, where we can host almost 200 at one time. So the best part in all of it is that it's all available free with your library card. And you can book rooms up to 90 days out by visiting our website at columbuslibrary.org and visiting the library services page, which you'll find under the adult dropdown.
Small businesses, nonprofits, anyone in the community who's looking for those types of resources, the Columbus Metropolitan Library is the place to start. Christine Cook, the Adult Services Manager for CML. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about yet in terms of what you're offering to small business owners here in Central Ohio?
So all of our locations offer a variety of services for all of our customers, as well as those who are looking for business services. We offer printing from our computers, as well as copiers that, in addition to copying, also do scanning and send faxes. Both of those services are free. And then we also have public computers available at all of our locations. Here at Main, in the Business and Nonprofit Resource Center, we have Macs available with the Adobe Creative Cloud on them that allow you to build flyers or posters, whatever creative needs you have. And we also are excited to offer free Wi-Fi at all of our locations. And when you bring in your device, whether that's a laptop or a phone or tablet, you have access to all of the great resources that we have available, including printing and our research tools. We also are excited to be launching notary services at a few of our locations soon. So stay tuned to the website for announcements on when exactly that's going to happen.
Like the CEO of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, Patrick Losinski, says, public libraries are so much more than books. And I think we have proven that today. Christine Cook, Adult Services Manager for Columbus Metropolitan Library, I thank you so much for joining us to help us learn a little more about all the things that the library has to offer.
Thank you, Kate. We're very excited to be launching summer reading here on June 1st. So just remember, there's always something happening at the library.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
State leaders say Ohio's housing challenges are pervasive and getting worse. They say action needs to be taken now. After 8 months of work, the State Senate Select Committee on Housing recently released this 93-page report titled Housing Reimagined. It outlines 23 recommendations for the short-term and long haul to fix the supply and cost of housing in our state. Some of the key recommendations are create a housing dashboard to increase transparency about home prices, rental rates, inventory, inventory of houses and foreclosures, encourage alternative housing such as modular homes and tiny homes, review consumer protections in the home buying process, update codes for renters, and look at property taxes and incentives for builders. The committee says demand for housing is higher than the supply of homes everywhere in Ohio, keeping mortgages and rental rates high. They also say having competition in the market among builders would help bring costs down. Committee Chair Senator Michelle Reynolds says the first thing the state needs to do is take action. And Senator Reynolds says the first thing the state should not do is disrupt the free market with burdensome housing regulations. Senators introduced several bills, but the committee acknowledges it will take a long time to fix the housing challenges. They're looking at it as having goals for 6 months, 2 years, up to 10 years, but they say this is a start. Joining me now to talk about the housing crisis in Ohio are Republican State Senator Michelle Reynolds of Canal Winchester. She is the chair of the Senate Select Committee on Housing. And Democratic Senator Herschel Craig of Columbus. He's a member of the committee as well. Thank you both for being here. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having us.
And this question's for both of you, just to get the ball rolling here. What is your biggest takeaway from the months of work that you did, all the traveling, the testimony you heard from, I think, 200 and some witnesses, and the information you gathered, Senator Reynolds? What was the biggest thing that you learned from that work?
So I think it confirmed what we already know, is that this is quite a challenge. It's pervasive and it's escalating, and that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to get this challenge addressed. We need to work together collaboratively, and the state needs to play a role, but we really wanted to know what role that should be, that the state should to intervene in this situation. And so I think the biggest takeaway is that we need a regional approach to this problem. We cannot continue to work in silos, and we need to support our local communities as we move forward to address this challenge.
How about for you, Senator Craig? What was the biggest
thing? Well, absolutely. The acknowledgement that there is a housing crisis that is both fundamental and foundational, that all of our families have safe, decent, and affordable housing. And it's clear as we travel around the state, certainly it's bipartisan committee. I've served as the ranking member on the committee. But getting input from our public sector, important sector, getting information from our advocates and so many folks, our residents from all over the state. So it was vitally important.
So what is the big issue here, Senator Reynolds? What is causing this crisis? If there's probably not just one thing.
I believe it's a combination of several factors. We have economic factors, we have social factors, we have policy factors. And so it's a perfect storm. We are in the tale of two cities. In Ohio, we have our urban region is experiencing economic growth that's very unprecedented. And then we also have in our rural areas where we have population decline. And so it's a problem either way. Mm-hmm. But there's a number of things that have contributed to this. And inflation, of course, is one of the paramount reasons that we're experiencing this problem. But, you know, here in Ohio, we are attracting new companies, new business. It's an economic driver. And so it's exacerbated the problem. And at this point, we no longer can ignore it.
Yeah, kind of a positive that's creating
Absolutely.
A different kind of negative. Senator Craig, did you find that this is kind of a supply and demand issue?
Well, absolutely. In the state of Ohio, there are 270, a deficit of 270 housing units in central Ohio. With all of our growth, enormous growth, and things that we're excited about, there's 52,000, a deficit of 52,000 houses. That's deeply troubling. If we did nothing today, we could fill those. But the fact of the matter is, looking at 1 million people coming to central Ohio, we need to be having 88,000 houses, homes for our families. So there
is that
very
built
much.
Every year, or is it talking in the long term?
You know, I think, as you know, there hasn't been a zoning revisit in 70 years. And so they're engaged right now in a very comprehensive process to make sure. And what our work is that we're working alongside them,
in the city of Columbus,
the work that they're doing.
So what can be done about it? I guess that's the million-dollar question right now. And the committee came up with these 23 recommendations to start tackling the problem. We have a graphic we can show with some of the key ones on there. It's only six of the 23. Yes. But Senator Reynolds, where do you think the key is with these recommendations the committee came up with after these 8 months?
So I think there's a number of factors that we can do, some that take legislative action and others that are just kind of good policy decisions that can be made. One of the things is that we need to position Ohio to be a pro-housing state. We need to embrace the fact that we are growing, but we need smart, responsible growth. And we realize that when you start talking about pro-housing, that scares people, right? It can scare people in local communities to say, hey, we don't want that here. We have a NIMBY syndrome, which is not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that the state can do is to message that we here are embracing people in Ohio. We're embracing housing in Ohio. We realize it is a challenge. And so we need to have a Yes in My Backyard campaign.
The YIMBY instead
the
of
YIMBY,
NIMBY, right?
Yes, absolutely. So to help our local communities be able to address that problem, that no, we're not going to just put anything in our backyards. We want to be careful. We want to be strategic. And we want to make sure that we're deliberate about what we are building. But in order to tackle this problem, we have to have density. That is more supply of housing. We have to use what we have and make good space and good use of what we have. The other thing that we can do is to invest our resources wisely. We already do a number of different things through the LIHTC program, low-income housing tax credits. We have the Ohio Housing Trust Fund. We have the Welcome Home Ohio program. We're doing some wonderful things, but we have to make sure that it counts because this is when it matters. And so we have to look at those investments and make very strategic investments. And we also need to work alongside our private sector. We know that this is a problem also for the business community, who very much so want to know what can we do about workforce housing. Mm-hmm. So we need to couple that and say, okay, to make the dollar stretch, how can we leverage public-private partnerships and make sure that we have the housing that we need, not just from an affordability standpoint for low income, but all the way up? Housing needs to be affordable at every level.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the interesting things, too, Senator, was, you know, when we think of housing, maybe we think more in the traditional sense of a single-family home or maybe a fourplex or an apartment building. But the committee is also looking at things with alternative forms of housing, like tiny homes and different modular things, right?
Well, absolutely, and as we should be. I think the innovation that is occurring, I think the chairman has rightly stated it. We need to certainly be open to different approaches, different concepts, and ideas regarding this matter. And we heard about that as we traveled around the state. You know, it is a complex issue, but it's one in which it's important that we begin to do the work. And what is also, I am so pleased to see that both chambers are looking at this issue. Mm-hmm. We have legislation in both chambers. Now the work must begin. Next week, in fact, I have a hearing on we call it the circuit breaker, mm-hmm. where we're looking at capping at certain levels, at 65 and at a certain level of income. Certainly the senator and I, we have legislation that we're introducing, and we will next week, not only introduced it, but we will have hearings next week. So now we begin the process of really doing the hard work, the work that needs to happen.
The information is gathered. Now it's time to put it
absolutely
into motion. Senator Reynolds, I guess when you look at this, there are some things that can be done in the short term, but this is really something that's going to take a while.
Yeah.
So kind of setting those goals that are farther out is part of this as well. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a long game and a short game. You know, we didn't get here overnight, so we can't anticipate that we're going to be able to just wave a magic wand and all is going to be well. And we also need to know what does it look like when we are doing the right things, which is one of the reasons why we have a recommendation for an Ohio housing dashboard, because everybody says the sky is falling. But how do we know when it's not falling anymore if we're doing the right things? So we need to be able to have measurable outcomes and track and a dashboard to be able to see with some of these policy decisions and investments that we're making, what does it look like? Are we in the green? Do we need to do more of it, less of it? Are we doing the wrong thing? So that way we can really move the needle. We are data-driven here in Ohio, and we need to make sure that we continue to do that so that we can make good policy decisions.
Just have about 30 seconds left, Senator. What do you hope happens after all this work?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, and that Senator has rightly stated, is that we want to make housing not just two of those things, both affordable housing and housing that is affordable for all of our families. They deserve it. I think we're in a position to do the work. Obviously, there's some short-term goals and immediate goals that we need to most certainly ensure that that happens. And there's some long-range goals that we need to have happen comprehensively, thoughtfully, and they need to happen.
Senator Herschel Craig, Senator Michelle Reynolds, thank you for your time today. And we'll see how this all plays out over the coming months and years in the legislature.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug, so much.
Thank you.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Unrest on college campuses continued throughout the week. Demonstrators have rallied for a ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza and to urge universities to divest from ties with Israel. Police have arrested more than 1,000 people nationwide so far. Here in Columbus, protesters continued their calls for Ohio State University to divest ties with Israel. Protesters say they want the university to not only divest, but also enact an academic boycott of Israeli institutions. 10TV heard from one student who just returned from New York after joining encampments at schools including Columbia University.
It's beautiful to see my fellow students. While I didn't go attend those schools, I made a lot of friends who did attend those schools, and it's beautiful to see them standing up for what they believe in and to see them standing up for the people of Gaza.
We also heard from a Jewish student. He says he no longer feels safe to wear clothing or jewelry representing his faith without fear of retaliation.
The one thing that I truly want to see is a message of peace sent. When they chant that the Israeli Defense Force and the KKK and Columbus Police are all the same, it does not cause peace. It does not resolve the problem. It only perpetrates it and causes more issues.
The university has told us they cannot divest from Israel because of Ohio state law. A university spokesperson says Ohio revised code prohibits the university from divesting any interest in Israel and prohibits adoption or adhering to a policy that requires divestment from Israel or with persons or interests associated with it. On Tuesday, April 23rd, two Ohio State students were arrested during a protest. Then on Thursday, the 25th, campus police arrested three people in the morning during a protest, including a university employee and a graduate student. But later that night, both campus police and state troopers arrested 36 people during another protest. 16 were OSU students. The other 20 were not affiliated with the university. We spoke with Ohio Governor Mike DeWine about these protests. He says he believes the demonstration that resulted in 36 arrests was handled correctly by the university.
These demonstrations and these arrests were done in open view. Anybody could have had a camera there and did with cell phones. All our troopers now have cameras on them. So it's all very, very transparent. And I think if anybody has a problem with it, they can look at that, any of that. And I think what you're going to see is this was handled very professionally.
As the protests around the country and the conflict overseas unfold, stay up to date on any major developments by getting the 10TV app. You can read the latest headlines and get push alerts from the Columbus News Leader sent straight to your phone. It's a free download in your phone's app store. Now to a big chunk of money flowing to Ohio's Appalachian region. Governor Mike DeWine says he doesn't want the region to be neglected anymore. So the state is pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into the 32 Appalachian counties to invigorate their economies and spur tourism.
In Chillicothe, Governor DeWine announced $154 million in grants as part of the Downtowns and Destinations Initiative.
We've looked at this part of the state, and it's been neglected in the past. But I also think it has tremendous potential. And it's really, we have the opportunity to use that develop that potential.
The governor's office says the goal is to revitalize historic downtown districts, create new opportunities for recreation, and make the experience better for tourists visiting the region's cultural sites. In this round of funding, the state awarded grants to 30 projects in 12 counties. For example, the city of Chillicothe received $35 million. One part of the project calls for the renovation of the 1926 Armory in Yoctangi Park into the UNESCO World Heritage Sites Visitors Center. Ohio's first UNESCO World Heritage Site, the ceremonial mounds of the Hopewell Culture National Historic Park, is a short 10-minute drive away. Four Hopewell ceremonial earthwork sites in Ross County will receive upgrades, such as pavilions, shelters, and bike trails.
Now with the mounds getting the designation as a World Heritage Site, you're going to really see people come in, not just from all over the United States, but you're going to see people come in from all over the world.
The upgrades at Yoctangi Park also include a new pavilion for a farmer's market, a roundabout entrance to the park, and a large outdoor amphitheater.
There are not words to express how big a deal this is. This is the word game changer was used. The governor was looking for transformational, and he got it. I mean, this will change the trajectory of Chillicothe for years to come.
Chillicothe Mayor Luke Feeney says they hope to have the work mostly finished by late 2026.
This round of funding is part of the larger $500 million Appalachian Community Grant Program. The governor's office says $144 million had already been awarded, including $64 million to improve health care access. Again, $154 million was awarded in this round. The state says nearly $200 million in grant funding will be announced in the coming weeks. Governor DeWine says those projects will be all along the Ohio River. Federal help is coming to those affected by the March 14th tornadoes in 11 Ohio counties. President Biden declared that a major disaster exists in Ohio after the deadly and destructive tornadoes.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.